Welcome to another episode of Inside UMiami Medicine Podcast. Today, we are in for an absolute treat. We have with us Dr. Matthias Van Herath, who is the Scientific Director of the Diabetes Research Institute at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Just recently recruited from Scripps La Jolla, and he brings to us a world of experience. In fact, he is truly a world-renowned diabetes expert who has received numerous prestigious awards and accolades for his work. These include being named the number one juvenile diabetes expert in the world, recipient of the American Diabetes Association's Outstanding Scientific Achievement Award, as well as a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Network for Pancreatic Organ Donors with Diabetes, just to name a few. Dr. Van Herath, Matthias, it is a pleasure to welcome you to Inside UMiami Medicine Podcast. We know that you've been advancing the field of diabetes research for more than 25 years. Please tell the audience a little bit about your journey that led you to your current position as the Scientific Director of the Diabetes Research Institute at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine.
Thank you so much. I'm super happy to be here. That's the most important thing. And to mind comes, when I came to Miami, the collaborative atmosphere and the synergy transdisciplinary you have here is just mind-boggling. It's fantastic. But coming to the journey, it started very personal for me. I lost my father when I was 8 very early, and that installed a lot of uncertainty in my life. And I felt I needed to get a handle on this to better safeguard ourselves against disease. And I decided very early that I would do medicine and research. Then you ask, how did I end up in type 1 diabetes? Seems now a long time ago. It was around 1991. We were fascinated with the question why the body would attack sometimes our own cells. Type 1 diabetes, arthritis, multiple sclerosis, the whole complex of autoimmune diseases. And I wanted to solve that. It has turned out to be very difficult. We can talk about this a bit. And I started a postdoc at Scripps Research with Michael Oldstone to better understand it. And that got me into type 1 diabetes. We had
But before that, you grew up in Germany, and that's where you went to school. And before, so let's get to how you decided that this is what you wanted to do and leading up to the postdoc. And
So I studied medicine in Germany. I practiced 3 years, mostly in emergency medicine and oncology. And I felt that if I would go into research, I would have a chance, maybe one in a million, debatable, to do something good for many people. And I was willing to take that chance. And as we said before, tackle autoimmune diseases. And that really led me into my postdoc at Scripps Research. And we started to look into what viruses could do to trigger.
Why did you select Scripps? Why was that the place that you chose to come to?
Because at that time, Michael Oldstone, who was my mentor, he had just developed models for type 1 diabetes, where intriguingly, you could trigger the disease with a virus. And I thought at that time, and it's still quite relevant to understand these diseases, I thought at that time that that was a very, very interesting hook in understanding autoimmunity and why, so to speak, these barriers break down between the immune system and our organs in some of the patients. So that's how it came about altogether.
Fantastic. So, okay, postdoc at Scripps, and then what?
Then a usual academic career. I rose through the ranks at Scripps Research and moved to La Jolla Institute in 2001, and there I was full professor for quite some time. I moved more and more into translational aspects of research in the course of my career, and also more and more away from mouse models into human pathology in my journey, as better means became available to understand diseases such as type 1 diabetes. And in this case, we worked much with the National Organ Donor Program to better understand the human disease. And after that, I felt I needed to translate sort of in a way our babies that we had discovered to the clinic. And I joined Novo Nordisk in 2012 and built a research unit for Novo Nordisk in Seattle, focused on discovery and development of new interventions for type 1 diabetes, which one is now in the clinic for antigenic tolerance, so to speak. And the other one was the largest combinatorial trial ever done in recent onset adult diabetes that was published in Lancet a while ago. So it has been a good journey altogether. I'm now still working with Novo Nordisk, as you know, in the Global Chief Medical Office on the side of the of the patients.
And we are really thrilled to have you here as the director of the DRI, that's the Diabetes Research Institute. But before we delve into some of the great work that's taking place, why don't you give the audience a quick primer on type 1 diabetes, what it is, what causes it, and how does it differentiate from type 2, why are we interested in type 1, and so on and so forth, and why this is such an important problem to solve?
Yes, that's where it all starts. And I'm really here for the patients. I want to make a difference. That's what's driving me every day. In America, about 1.5 million people currently have type 1 diabetes. And the problem is probably even bigger because we have, in comparison, about 33 million people with type 2 diabetes. But especially among the adults with type 2 diabetes, we might have somewhere around 5%, maybe 6%, who actually have type 1 diabetes, or in addition to type 2, related issues such as insulin resistance.
It's diagnosed.
There's a mixed diagnosis, and they also have type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, in its clear definition, is what you call an autoimmune disease, of course. And that means that your immune system attacks your own cells. And that phenomenon is really still not fully understood. We discussed briefly the role of viruses in triggering that disease. It's probably not the only cause. Viruses are probably accelerators if you have an infection like COVID. It was much discussed in the press. But my favorite hypothesis is it could be innervation of the pancreas. And then what happens is that the cells in diabetes, the islet cells, they become visible to the immune system. It's almost like you pull a Harry Potter cloak off these cells. So it's a barrier breakdown, and all of a sudden the immune system can see these cells. And I think...
So those are the beta...
The beta cells in the pancreas that make the insulin. And with that...
They're exposed, so they can get
attacked. And the immune system already had some cells that could recognize these islets and the beta cells, but they were sort of laying in waiting, often in the exocrine pancreas. And then when they become visible like a beacon, they become interested in them. And I tend to think that that's a common theme in many autoimmune diseases. And maybe the most fascinating argument that some of this is caused by the innervation is that you often see, for example, in vitiligo, where you lose the pigment of your skin, you see this symmetry that is baffling, that one pattern on one hand looks like the pattern on the other hand. And you can really not explain it any other way. In arthritis, you see the symmetry. So the idea is that an innervation coupled maybe with repeated virus insults make your target in diabetes, the beta cell islets, unveil themselves. And then the immune system thinks, wrongly so, that something is wrong, and it becomes interested in the organ, and that triggers the whole process altogether.
Wonderful. So, so the beta cells get exposed, then immune cells, the patient's own immune cells, see them and say, we get excited, and then start attacking them. So what's the ultimate moonshot? How are we going to solve this problem? And then we can delve into how the DRI is trying to solve this mystery.
So, if you can look at it in two ways. One is in a very basic way to understand what really causes autoimmunity and all the diseases in the first place. And that's probably where the moonshot of understanding the role of the nervous system and viruses, like we just discussed, come into play. The second way is in a much more practical way. We say, okay, regardless what caused these diseases, we might only understand it in the not so close future. We want to treat the disease. And the vision there is twofold. It has become possible to prevent the disease, and we can delve a little bit into this, and with immune modulatory drug treatments, just recently with anti-CD3. And it has become possible, in principle, that you make from stem cells islets, and you replenish the beta cells that patients have lost, and you put the stem cell-derived islets back into patients. And there are still many things that need to be dealt with. We will discuss this, I'm sure. And then essentially have an organ replacement, and the patient doesn't have the deficit in insulin anymore. So that's the practical moonshots, how to treat the disease. And these practical moonshots, in my mind, will work even if we would never figure out the combinatorial events that caused the disease altogether, but we can still treat it. So, and that's, of course, for the mission of the DII, what we want to achieve, very relevant, because it has very practical aspects, how to bring therapies in the fastest possible way to patients.
So anti-CD3, since you brought that up, tell us about how does it work, and what were your contributions to this particular form of therapy?
So, as I alluded to in my career before, we became more and more interested in therapies, and the immune system becomes interested in the islets. So it seemed clear that you have to do something against the immune system
to stop it.
And it's mostly a group of cells that you call T cells. It's unfortunately the same group of cells that we, for example, need after vaccine or after infection to defend us from a recurrent severe COVID infection, for that matter. So we need these memory T cells. And the same group of T cells has cells that recognize islets, unfortunately so. So the art will be to lower them without lowering ultimately these cells that we need to defend ourselves against viruses that each of us needs. So the
So you're targeting the receptor, the CD3 receptor on the cells, because that's the identity. Those are the ones that are going to do the attack. So you want to just lower that population.
Yes, and what was so cool about the anti-CD3 is that it was not a drawn-out long therapy that you have to stay on forever, but that if you gave a targeted, as you call it, induction therapy for a short time, in this case, it's a cycle of about 10 days, and it's now that the drug is on the market by Provention Bio and Sanofi, is also something we do here at UM. It's an induction therapy, so you receive the drug for 10 days, and of course, you receive it while you don't have infections and all the other good things, so to make it safe. And then it induces some form of a reset of the cells that attack the islets and some remaining regulation. Not in all patients, but in a large proportion of the patients. And they showed that they can delay diabetes for up to 2.5 years, which was never done as a proof of concept. So you find patients who have already made antibodies to their beta cells. They are not diagnosed with diabetes yet, and you delay the diagnosis of disease and the insulin deficiency by 2.5 years. Our contribution was a lot in the early development in mouse studies, combinatorial therapies, and so forth. Sorry.
No. That's great. That's great to hear. But this is fascinating. So here we have a treatment that can delay the onset of type 1 diabetes. Now, how do I select people in the population who should be candidates to receive this therapy?
Yeah, so the excitement in the community, I should say, is tremendous, because this is the first proof of concept and the first approved drug in the US that can do this with the immune system. How do you find the people? There's two visions. One is the proximal vision and one is the long-term vision. The proximal vision is, you know from diabetes, you have families where you have occurrences of diabetes. And you can screen the siblings or sometimes the parents, and the families know that they are at risk because already one of the children was diagnosed. Then the second one, and in the families, they know about the disease, they're well informed, and they will say, well, the second one, we would like to delay the disease. So that's the proximal way, and that's right now how the drug is being mostly launched. The big vision.
What about a genetic screen to.
Exactly, exactly. The big vision is that you will build this into our infrastructure in the country. You would receive a genetic screen, you would receive an antibody screen, and actually, it sounds difficult. The costs of this are now low. So you can probably pull this off for maybe $15, $20 per patient. So that's not the issue. The only thing that keeps us from rolling this out at this point nationwide is you have to, of course, take care of the patients. So if you screen me with a genetic test or you do an antibody test, I'm going to come back to you and say, now what do I do? What does it mean? How is my risk? Am I already sick? And, what do I need to watch for?
And at which point do you give the...
What are the interventions?
Right.
And so forth. So that remains sort of the moonshot vision. I think we can create the infrastructure, especially if we couple it with other preventive screens. So you could then counsel the patients on many, many issues. Celiac disease is an example. There's thyroiditis. And I think that will move forward. In a general way, especially now that you can offer the patients a treatment at least. And I think there will be many to follow, combined with anti-CD3, different aspects of the immune system, beta cell centric. We discussed that the beta cells reveal themselves to do directly something to recamouflage your beta cells. I think that will all follow. It's sort of like the door is now open. That's why this is so tremendously cool. This is so cool.
So this is great. Now, as promising as anti-CD3 therapy seems to be, the truth is, as you stated, it only delays the onset of diabetes for maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
What happens after that? I mean, and I understand you also, it has other limitations in that you have to give immune suppression just for this drug to have effect. So it's a double-edged sword. So tell us, is this the way to go? And what happens after the 3 years?
So that starts getting a little bit into our very important interdisciplinary task that we will have at the DRI. The last frontier that needs to be solved for prevention of diabetes as well as islet replacement is to deal with the immune system. This is the frontier. And we can talk about it in a minute probably. The same for islet replacement. And you are right on the button. Systemic immune suppression that is prolonged, like if you would be an organ recipient in type 1 diabetes, is not in a general way going to fly in the population. It's not going to be an attractive proposition for most patients. And so we need to find a way to tune these immune therapies. And this is where our task at the DRI comes in, to pave the way and to accelerate things. The way this will work in my mind is it's like an exercise in sweet spot finding, like what the oncologists have done with their combinatorial therapies. And the way this will go is that you use drugs like anti-CD3 as an induction. I think one can deal with that, and it's a limited amount of time. You would tell me, okay, Matt, you have to take this anti-CD3 for one cycle, and then we put you on a maintenance therapy. This is the vision. And the maintenance therapy would then, and that's what we really would like to test, extend the effect. And the maintenance drugs, you would take lifelong, but they are not systemic immunosuppressant. This could be drugs that foster the beta cell, grow more beta cells. There's interesting candidates for that. Camouflage the beta cells, or make peacekeeper cells, as I call them, with an antigenic tolerance. So that would be the ideal vision for that. And in a very similar way, that vision would also translate after you receive stem cell-derived islets. The immune problems are not precisely the same, but very interrelated with memory cells and sensitization to your islet and all these concepts.
So great segue. So stem cell derived islets. So that's an attempt to replace the beta cells that have been damaged because they were exposed. So tell us about how that would work in combination with this induction therapy, and what are we doing here?
So, as you know, the DRI has been focused for the past 20 years or longer under leadership of Camillo Ricordi on this cure vision. And the cure vision is absolutely essential for patients who already have the disease, because they already lost their beta cells. So there's no way to prevent anything. And there, the only way to cure the patients is to put new islets back in. And now there have been tremendous progress in the field, because it's now possible to make stem cell-derived islets and put them into patients and have glycemic control. The company Vertex has recently shown this.
Why don't they get destroyed?
Yeah, so, well, we come to that. So the first proof of concept that you actually make islets from stem cells was a moonshot for decades. And people, wow. It was a dream, but nobody knew that was possible. That's now possible. And actually, the first patient who received the full dose of the stem cell-derived islets from Vertex was treated right here at UM. So,
and what happened?
It was the first proof of concept that it can work and that you can achieve a normal glycemia. Of course, you refer to what is that the end? Of course, that's not the end of the road. We need to now find a way, because this occurred with full immunosuppression, like in an organ transplant setting, like if you would have a liver transplanted or kidney. Now, similar in prevention of diabetes, we need to find better immunotherapies that will be better tolerable for the patients. That's one component, this induction maintenance therapy. With the islets, actually, we have additional opportunities, and that's where I love the interdisciplinarity of the DRI so much, where we can do other things at the same time. One is to make islets that are already camouflaged. Almost they have this Harry Potter clock on already. They're immune evasive islets and they miss some recognition molecules. A big mission of the DRI will be to help speed this up, to choose the right molecules, right? And the other thing that can be done is there's devices. And devices will also help camouflage the islets, but ideally in a way that they have enough oxygen and insulin can come out and they sense glucose. So this interdisciplinary work between devices, immune evasion, and systemic immune therapy, and putting the islets in the right spot in patients, that will be a big area of work where DRI hopes to be a key accelerator of the whole field in the benefit of everybody.
This is fantastic. I think this is a great place for us to take a break, because I really want to delve into the concept of the immune evasive stem cell derived islets, because there are so many other treatment options that we need to consider. So perhaps in our next segment, we can talk a little bit about that, because I do not want to truncate this very, very important discussion on type 1 diabetes, because the DRI is really on the verge of doing something significant under your very capable leadership. So we'll stop here and then pick up again on our discussion of the evasive concepts and other modalities to solve this very, very...
Yeah, I hope very much to be able to bring you some cutting-edge work on organoids in the next round that we're going to be starting. And that will be... Hopefully, then I'll be armed with the first data. That would be so good.
Well, I'm excited that you brought that, because it's going to make... That's what's going to keep our audience and captivated to hear the second part of the podcast.
Yes.
So this has been our first edition with Dr. Von Harris of UMiami Medicine podcast on the treatment of type 1 diabetes. Please join us for the second part of this fascinating discussion, because there is a whole lot more for you to learn.